It's Thursday. Easter Sunday's coming up. You know, I used to walk 5 miles to church every Sunday. Church wasn't but 2 blocks away, but I'd take the long way around. So you ain't got no excuse. I expect to see everybody, especially you, Sister Tammy. You might want to plan on going twice. But right now, I got a hot new one for you.
Segregation now, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever.
I believe segregation should and will end. You know my heart, but this will encourage violence. It just takes us backwards. And that this is anarchy and it's not our people. I mean, there's no argument with the goals, Earl. I know you've preached on it. I've preached on it. Let me look. Well, yeah. Yeah, this is good. It's very clear. We expressed understanding that honest convictions in racial matters could properly be pursued in the courts, but urged that decisions of those courts should in the meantime be peacefully obeyed. Since that time, there's been some evidence of increased forbearance. That's a good word. Forbearance and willingness to face facts. Responsible citizens have undertaken to work on various problems which cause racial friction and unrest. We all have opportunity for a new constructive and realistic approach to racial problems. However, we're now confronted by a series of demonstrations by some of our Negro citizens directed and led in part by outsiders. We recognize the natural impatience of people who feel that their hopes are slow in being realized, but we are convinced that these demonstrations are unwise and untimely. Yeah, exactly. Hey, is Mill agreed to sign on? Good. I mean, this just makes sense. Yeah, have a happy Easter.
My dear fellow clergymen, while confined here in the Birmingham City Jail, I came across your recent statements calling my present activities unwise and untimely. Seldom do I pause to answer criticisms of my work and ideas, but if I sought to answer all the criticisms that crossed my desk, my secretaries would have little time for anything other than such correspondence in the course of the day, and I would have no time for constructive work. But since I feel that you are men of genuine goodwill and that your criticisms are sincerely set forth, I want to try to answer your statement in what I hope will be patient and reasonable terms. See, I think that I should indicate why I am here in Birmingham, since you have been influenced by the view which argues against outsiders coming in. I have the honor of serving as president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, an organization operating in every southern state. Several months ago, the affiliate here in Birmingham asked us to be on call to engage in a nonviolent direct action program, if such were deemed necessary. Now, we readily consented. And when the hour came, we lived up to our promise. So I, along with other members of my staff, am here because I was invited here. Now, I am here because I have organizational ties here.
But more basically, I am in Birmingham because injustice is here. Just as the prophets of the 8th century BC left their villages and carried their thus saith the Lord far beyond the boundaries of their hometowns, and just as the Apostle Paul left his village of Tarsus and carried the gospel of Jesus Christ to the far corners of the Greco-Roman world, so am I compelled to carry the gospel of freedom beyond my hometown. Like Paul, I must constantly respond to the Macedonian call for aid. Moreover, I am cognizant of the interrelatedness of all communities and states. I cannot sit idly by in Atlanta and not be concerned about what happens in Birmingham. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
We have said, we have preached that no person's freedom is safe unless every person's freedom is equally protected.
We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. Tied in a single garment of destiny, whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. Never again can we afford to live with the narrow, provincial, outside agitator idea. Anyone who lives in the United States can never be considered an outsider anywhere within its bounds. You deplore the demonstrations taking place in Birmingham, but your statement, I am sorry to say, fails to express a similar concern for the conditions that brought about the demonstrations. It is unfortunate that demonstrations are taking place in Birmingham, but it is even more unfortunate that the city's white power structure left the Negro community with no other alternative.
We agree rather with certain local Negro leadership, which has called for honest and open negotiation of racial issues in our area.
In any nonviolent campaign, there are four basic steps: collection of the facts to determine whether injustices exist, negotiation, self-purification, and direct action. We have gone through all of these steps in Birmingham. There can be no gainsaying the fact that racial injustice engulfs this community. Now, Birmingham is probably the most thoroughly segregated city in the United States. Now, its ugly record of brutality is widely known. Negroes have experienced grossly unjust treatment in the courts. There have been more unsolved bombings at Negro homes and churches in Birmingham than in any other city in the nation. Now, these are the hard, brutal facts of the case. On the basis of these conditions, Negro leaders sought to negotiate with the city fathers. But the latter consistently refused to engage in good faith negotiation. Then came the opportunity last September to talk with some of the leaders of the economic community. In these negotiating sessions, certain promises were made by the merchants, such as the promise to remove the humiliating racial signs from the stores. On the basis of these promises, we agreed to call a moratorium on any type of demonstration. As the weeks and months unfolded, we realized that we were the victims of a broken promise. Now, the signs remain. As in so many experiences of the past, we were confronted with blasted hopes, and the dark shadow of a deep disappointment settled upon us. So, we have no alternative except that of preparing for direct action, whereby we present our very bodies as a means of laying our case before the conscience of the local and national community. See, we are not unmindful of the difficulties involved, so we've decided to go through a process of self-purification. And at these workshops of nonviolence, we repeatedly ask ourselves the questions: are you able to accept the blows without retaliating? Or are you able to endure the ordeals of jail?
Yes, but why direct action? Why sit-ins, marches, and so forth? Isn't negotiation a better path?
You are exactly right in your call for negotiation. Indeed, this is the purpose of direct action. Nonviolent direct action seeks to create such a crisis and establish such creative tension that a community that has consistently refused to negotiate is forced to confront the issue. It seeks so to dramatize the issue that it can no longer be ignored. I just referred to the creation of tension as part of the work of the nonviolent resistor. This may sound rather shocking, but I must confess that I am not afraid of the word tension. I have earnestly worked and preached against the violent tension, but there is a type of constructive nonviolent tension that is necessary for growth. Just as Socrates felt that it was necessary to create a tension in the mind so that individuals could rise from the bondage of myths and half-truths to the unfettered realm of creative analysis and objective appraisal, we must see the need of having nonviolent gadflies to create the kind of tension in society that would help men rise from the dark depths of prejudice and racism to the majestic heights of understanding and brotherhood. The purpose of our direct action program is to create a situation so crisis-packed that it will inevitably open the door to negotiation. Now, I would therefore concur with you and your call for negotiation. Too long has our beloved Southland been bogged down in a tragic effort to live in a monologue rather than dialogue. One of the basic points in your statement is that the action that I and my associates have taken in Birmingham is untimely. My friends, I must say to you that we have not made a single gain in civil rights without determined legal and nonviolent pressure. Lamentably, it is an historical fact that privileged groups seldom give up their privileges voluntarily. Individuals may see the moral light and voluntarily give up their unjust posture. We know through painful experience that freedom never voluntarily is given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed.
Wait. We respectfully urge those who strongly oppose desegregation to pursue their convictions in the courts and in the meantime to peacefully to abide by the decisions of those same courts. We recognize that our problems cannot be solved in our strength or on the basis of human wisdom alone. The situation that confronts us calls for earnest prayer, for clear thought, for understanding love, and or courageous action. Thus, we call on all people of goodwill to join us in seeking divine guidance as we make our appeal for law and order and common sense.
Frankly, I have yet to engage in a direct action campaign that was well-timed in the view of those who have not suffered unduly from the disease of segregation. For years now, I have heard the word wait. Now, it rings in the ear of every Negro with a piercing familiarity. Now, this wait has almost always meant never. And as one of our distinguished jurors once said, justice too long delayed is justice denied.